The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 5th, 1997 in Perth, Australia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 11th chapter, verse 12.
Shatragya eta manaso vibhuti.
Shatragya eta manaso vibhuti.
Jivasya maya rochitasya nitya.
Jivasya maya rochitasya nitya.
Avihita kva piti rohitascha.
Avihita kva piti rohitascha.
Sudho vichaste havi suddha kartu.
Sudho vichaste havi suddha kartu.
Kshetagya eta manaso vibhuti.
Kshetagya eta manaso vibhuti.
Jivasya maya rochitasya nitya.
Jivasya maya rochitasya nitya.
Avihita kvapiti rohitascha.
Avihita kvapiti rohitascha.
Suddho vichaste havi suddha kartu.
Suddho vichaste havi suddha kartu.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Jai.
The individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. They have been existing from time immemorial. Sometimes they are manifest in the awakening state and in the dream state. But during deep sleep or unconsciousness or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A translation repetition. The individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness.
The individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness.
Has many ideas and activities.
Has many ideas and activities.
Created in the mind.
Created in the mind.
By the external energy.
By the external energy.
They have been existing from time immemorial.
They have been existing from time immemorial.
Sometimes they are manifest.
Sometimes they are manifest.
In the awakening state.
In the awakening state.
And in the dream state.
And in the dream state.
But during deep sleep.
But during deep sleep.
Unconsciousness.
Unconsciousness.
Or trance.
Or trance.
They disappear.
They disappear.
A person who is liberated.
A person who is liberated
in this life,
in this life,
Jivan Mukta,
Jivan Mukta,
can see all these things vividly.
Can see all these things vividly.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Kshatragyam Chapi Mang Dithi Sarva Kshatreshu Bharata. There are two kinds of Kshatragya, or living beings. One is the individual living being and the other is the supreme living being. The ordinary living being knows about his body to some extent, but the Supreme, Paramatma, knows the condition of all bodies. The individual living being is localized and the Supreme, Paramatma, is all-pervading. In this sloka, the word Kshatragya refers to an ordinary living being, not the Supreme Living Being. This ordinary living being is of two kinds, Nitya Baddha and or Nitya Mukta. One is eternally conditioned and the other is eternally liberated. The eternally liberated living beings are in the Vaikuntha Jagat, the spiritual world, and they never fall into the material world. Those in the material world are conditioned souls, Nitya Baddha. The Nitya Baddha can become liberated by controlling the mind because the cause of conditioned life is the mind. When the mind is trained and the soul is not under the mind's control, the soul can be liberated even in this material world. When it is liberated, one is called Jivan Mukta. A Jivan Mukta knows how he has become conditioned. Therefore, he tries to purify himself and return home back to Godhead. The eternally conditioned soul is eternally conditioned because he is controlled by the mind. The conditioned state and liberated state are compared to the sleeping unconscious state and the awakened state. Those who are sleeping and unconscious are eternally conditioned, but those who are awake understand that they are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, even in this material world, they engage in Krishna's service. As confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami, Iha Yasya Harir Dasya, if one takes to Krishna's service, he is liberated, even though he appears to be a conditioned soul within the material world. Jivan Mukta Sa Uchite. In any condition, one is to be considered liberated if his only business is to serve Krishna. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 11th chapter, 12th text. In the matter of Jara Bharata instructs King Rahugana. Iha yasya harer dase karmana manasa gira nikalasvat yavasta su jivan mukta su uchite. Rupa Goswami explains, if somebody is fixed in serving the Lord as his engaged in devotional service as a servitor of the Lord, karmana manasa gira, with his activities, with his mind, and with his words, then even though one is living in a material world, that person is considered to be liberated. So here we have a Jivan Mukta being explained. So in the context that everyone in the material world is Jiva, is Nitya Badha, eternally conditioned. And everyone in the spiritual world is Jiva, is Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated. So then we have now a third category, the people in the material world who are completely engaged in Krishna's service, whose only business is to serve Krishna. They are considered Jivan Mukta, but even while they're in the material world, they're liberated. This is really interesting. Recently, there was someone quoted a verse where Srila Prabhupada said that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a liberated soul. I'm following him. I don't say whether I'm liberated or not liberated or what. I only say that I'm following my spiritual master. He's a liberated soul because he's liberated and I'm following him. Therefore, I'm liberated. That this is the system. If you're following a liberated soul, following his instructions, so then you're as good as liberated, or you're also liberated simply by his mercy. And I was thinking, well, then we can apply that, that if we, Prabhupada was a liberated soul, and if we follow Srila Prabhupada in the same way, then we'll be liberated. So this verse especially is taking something that we are all experiencing every day and using it as an analogy. We're experiencing the waking state, dreaming state, and the deep sleep state to some extent. So that example is being given that the waking state is like the liberated state and the sleeping and deep sleep is like the conditioned state. While the conditioned souls, even when they're awake, what they're seeing is whatever the material nature is putting in their mind. They're not able to see things as they are. In the material world, people, especially now, there's the modern freedom of speech and the freedom of the press and things like that. People really like to tell it like it is. Everything should be open. But the reality is, if you don't have the full picture of what the total existence is, then one is always going to present things in a distorted manner. Just like you don't expect a little child to give you the total picture, because they're only seeing things with their partially developed mind in a partial way. They don't have the full picture of what's going on. You have to see things a bit through their eyes. Similarly, although we have here in this world, you know, big leaders, political leaders, and we have got scientists, and we have so many different kind of humanitarians and very qualified people with really good intentions, many of them, and at least they're quite qualified and intelligent. But because they don't have the total picture, they don't have the total understanding of what existence is. Therefore, based on the partial information, they make ultimately erroneous and harmful decisions. Srila Prabhupada wanted to change that, wanted to give the leaders of this planet the information that's available in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, so that they could make proper decisions. He wanted to also give the general people this information so they could also make proper decisions in their life. You don't expect somebody who's dreaming to really come up with a very factual kind of understanding while in the dream state. So as long as somebody is dreaming that I am this body, I am a man, I am a woman, I am an Australian, I am an American, I am a Russian, I am a Chinese, I am a human being, or I am a dog or a cat, you cannot expect to get a very objective, very beneficial decisions or thoughts from such a person. That everything is being produced by the material energy. Ahankara vibhuratma kortaham iti manyate. They're bewildered by their false ego. They're thinking they're the doer of everything. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai sarva, prakriti kriyamanani. But actually everything is being done by the material nature, through the three gunas. So according to how they're conditioned, not only they think you're the body, but then it's how your body is conditioned. So some people have developed sattvic outlook, or someone has developed a passionate outlook, or someone has developed an outlook very much in the mode of ignorance. And then according to the conditioning of their body, they're seeing things. Sometimes, like, example is given, if you put colored glass, you see through it. Or no, they always had colored glass, even thousands of years ago, and people could look through colored glass and they would see a red glass, everything looked red, right? Now you have sunglasses, so you can have, they offer you the choice. You can have yellow sunglasses and see everything yellow, or you can have green sunglasses, see everything green, or you can have gray sunglasses and see everything gray, or blue, even red. So you can get so many different colored sunglasses. Orange is a very popular color, right? So according to what the glass you wear, then after a while you adjust, you just think this is the way everything looks. When you take it off, and you say, oh, it's a whole different color here. So like that, according to the gunas that we have acquired at the present time, then we tend to see things that way. We have our prejudices, we have our likes, dislikes, all these things based on the conditioning. Gunai karmana sarvasa. Controlled by our karmas, by the qualities of nature, you're forced to act in a particular way. So, this is your basic problem that we're facing all over the world. Now, here comes Krishna conscious devotee, Prabhupada explained their Jiva Mukta. Because they're always, they have no other business than serving Krishna, even while they're living in the material world, they are already liberated. And what is their job? What is their primary task? To wake everybody else up. To wake people up from the state of ignorance and to bring them also into the liberated platform. We read yesterday that the conditioned souls who are in the bodies of plants and animals, it's very hard to wake them up. But by loudly chanting in Harinam, they get elevated and they get benefit. So then who are we talking about? We can wake up the human beings, Prabhupada said. He said, Lord Chaitanya, he could wake up the animals. He got the animals to chant in Jarikanda forest. But the human beings, they're more difficult to wake up. I mean, the human beings, Prabhupada said, they could be woken up by even us. If we get the humans to chant, then that's a good credit. You know, we don't expect to get the animals to chant. That's Lord Chaitanya can do that. There's an interesting story by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur about animals in the jungle. That there was one time a young carpenter, and he decided to go into the jungle to get wood. Then he'd make furniture and sell it, and he'd make some money, and this way he could become rich. And he would be able to do all the things he wanted to do with his money and so on. So there he was going to the forest, to the jungle, the Sundarbans jungle in southern Bengal, with his saw. And one old carpenter saw him heading to the jungle, said, where are you going? Looks like you're going to the jungle. He said, yes, but you don't have any weapon. How are you going to protect yourself? There's a tiger in there. So don't go to the jungle without a gun or something, because it's very dangerous. But the young carpenter thought, what does this old carpenter know? If I see a tiger coming, I'll just take my saw the branch off a tree, I'll swing the branch around my head, and I'll scare away the tiger. Nothing to fear. Right? So what do these old people know anyway? Right? Young people know better, right? That's what they think, see? So then the carpenter is there, he gathered, he already cut a lot of wood, he's got, you know, a good bundle. If you have to buy wood, expensive. So you go to the forest, you can get it free. That was the idea. Of course, there wasn't so many people going to the forest, so it wasn't a problem then. Now the forests are all cut down, so it's a problem. Then while he's there gathering the wood, a young tiger, not a very old one, you know, 3 years old, maybe only about 2.5 meters long, not one of the 3 meter long ones. Spots him from the distance and starts running up. So you can see the tiger running over the field. And he takes his saw and he starts to saw the branch to do his plan, you know. And he's sawing and sawing. But he doesn't have enough time. Tiger is not that slow. Tiger comes and grabs him by the leg and then starts chewing on him. And then he's finished. When all the villagers found out, they were very sad that young person sacrificed his life in that way. So in this is an analogy. So in this analogy, who was the old carpenter and who was the young carpenter? Anyone knows?
One died was the old carpenter, we couldn't see. Old carpenter, so-called old carpenter, was still living.
If you take that the young carpenter is someone who is seeking, It's like a young disciple or someone who's seeking spiritual life. Then who's the old carpenter? The guru. But he didn't listen to the guru. Instead, he followed his own dictates. So having a guru is absolutely essential for spiritual progress. In fact, of course, there are different types. There's a Diksha Guru, where one takes initiation and he establishes our relationship with Krishna, Sambandha. And then there's only one Diksha Guru. And then there's Siksha Guru, and Shastra says that one may have more than one Guru. So we may have many Siksha Gurus even. And the Siksha Guru, anyone who gives us valuable advice in our spiritual life, in one sense, is a Siksha Guru. And then someone who's totally absorbed in Krishna's service and who's guiding is considered like representative of the, directly representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Radha Govindaji, and is also, that's the Abhideya, giving us practical advice for our day-to-day devotional service. The Prabhupada explains in one purport that the devotee who takes advantage of the two types of gurus, of the Diksha Guru and Siksha Guru, and achieve success in Krishna consciousness, going back home, back to Godhead, that they're actually the successful and fortunate. So we need to listen, especially when we're having this kshetra, we're under the control of our mind, and our mind is not neutral. The mind is being controlled by the three modes of material nature. The mind is seeing things from a material point of view. We have to take advice and take the guidance and shelter from the Diksha and Siksha Guru. Actually, there's a letter where Prabhupada, he wrote, I don't know the whole context, but he wrote to his, to some GBC, the disciple who was helping him as a GBC, that I'm the Diksha Guru and I want the GBC should be Siksha Guru for my disciples. At that time, there was only Prabhupada disciples. So, of course, today in ISKCON, probably the Prabhupada disciples said, don't look to their older god brothers or god sisters for siksha or for help. For the grand disciples, it might be more. They might look to their guru, their diksha guru. They may look to other gurus or other Prabhupada disciples as a type of siksha guru to help them. But it's quite natural that even a god brother, god sister, look to a senior god brother, god sister as a siksha guru, as someone who can give spiritual guidance. And of course, especially the god brothers, god sisters of the guru, to be respected like that, in one sense. But there's someone you might really take shelter of as a siksha guru, someone that is, you develop a relationship with. That was there in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You read the Chaitanya Charanamrita and Krishna Das Kaviraj. He offers obeisances to his Diksha Guru and he offers to his Siksha Gurus like Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das and so many others. So this one thing which I say that in ISKCON, if my realization also is that if devotees have this relationship of Diksha Guru and Siksha Guru help to unite everyone much more. And if people feel more sheltered and helped. Some people, they don't have faith because of whatever reason or they may not even be fully qualified to take the formal shelter of a guru and be considered his Diksha or sheltered disciple. But they, if they have faith in someone like a guru or faith in someone as a guru, they could take shelter in the sense of take him as a or her as a Siksha Guru. and then get practical guidance for advancing in Krishna consciousness. And so this was the program at the time of Lord Chaitanya. Now here this young carpenter, he went, someone offered him some good shiksha, don't go into the jungle unprotected. He didn't listen. He listened to his mind, right? His mind had so many ideas. As a result, he became, you know, tiger chow mein, or tiger food, or whatever you call it. And he unnecessarily sacrificed his valuable life. So then, the village, you know, they were really unhappy to hear about that. But it so happened that there was a Hare Krishna preacher who visited the village. And he started to preach Krishna consciousness. And he had a program. And the program went late. We have experience of that last night. The program went late into the night, and people woke up a little late. When they woke up, though, they found that the sadhu had already left. So where did he go? He said, he went into the jungle. And they just recently the carpenter got killed. There's a tiger that they got very worried. Nobody warned him. There's a tiger in the jungle. We have to go and protect him, you know. And then they got their guns and everything. They followed his footprints, traced out where he was going to protect him. They were very concerned that they're following. And then deep into the jungle, they start hearing a kirtan, and they hear this, you know, sounds of chanting. So what's going on? Strange voices they've never heard before. And they look through the trees, and they see there, this devotee is chanting Hare Krishna, and all the tigers and the deers and everything, they're all chanting with him. On their hind leg, they're having a big kirtan, all the animals. And then they thought, what do we need guns for? He's getting the tigers to chant. Then they don't need a gun to protect him. So then in this part, this chapter of the analogy, this allegorical story, then who are the people with the guns? And who is the sadhu? And who are the wild animals? Anyone know? Pardon? The sadhu is a fully Krishna conscious Jivan Mukta devotee who is following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Someone who is fully engaging senses in Krishna's service. And the wild animals, who are they? They're the senses. They're the senses. Normally the senses are uncontrolled, right? Very difficult to control the senses. But this devotee is able to control the senses. Or you can say senses, or you could also say they're the vices. Normally the vices that devour us, kam, krodh, lobh, mad, masurjo, the lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, illusion. But they're all controlled because he's able to engage them all in Krishna's service. He's able to, they're all chanting Hare Krishna. So now they're not dangerous. But who are these people with the guns, the villagers? Bhakti Siddhanta, they give these analogies and everyone laugh at the story. Then it's like, you know, what does it mean? You know, like, it's not so easy. So in this analogy, he describes that the villagers with the guns are like the people following the Karmakanda. And their guns are that they have their sense gratification, which is according to some religious principle. So protected by from the grossest aspect of sin, of bad karma. But they're not free from material desire, they're within material desire, therefore they are fearful. They're afraid, that's why they have their guns, the weapons to protect their fearful. But the devotee, because he's engaging everything in Krishna's service, he has no fear.
Vajahure mana sinandanandana abhaya charanara vindure. By offering everything at the lotus feet of sinandanandana of Lord Krishna, then the devotee become fearless. Abhaya charanara vindure. This Prabhupada offered everything in the service of Krishna, and therefore he was fearless. When we want to enjoy sense gratification and we don't want to get the bad karmas and we have to figure out how to do that, then it becomes a fearful condition. What to speak of people who are not even trying to avoid the bad karmas? They're in a very, very hopeless position. They're going into deeper and deeper into the entanglements. Here, these people were well armed. It means that people, by following some religious system, they feel some protection. But it's not total, and it's not that they're without fears. So more than religion is Krishna consciousness, is actually to be totally engaged in devotional service. Then we come back to the beginning of this verse, iha yasya hirya dasya karmana manasa gira, that offering our thoughts, words, and deeds to Krishna. Actually, that's the vow that the Tridandi sannyasis take, that in this age, sannyas of giving up all work is prohibited. So instead they vow to use their thought, word, and deed in the service of Krishna. But that's also that everybody's supposed to do that, as much as they can. They're supposed to do 100%. Like where the sannyasi has to do this, is bhakti dasa, then he's considered substandard. So here we had this situation. We're all dealing with the mind, with the vices, with the wild animals. And we contain them simply by being Krishna conscious. That's the ideal method. There's no better method than that. Other methods are either totally ineffective, like the young carpenter wanted to just do it like kind of on the spot. That was also described, like some people think that they can control their material desires by the yoga system. Whenever I get agitated, I'll just sit and meditate. It doesn't work. Just like so many yogis are meditating, but their senses got out of control. You can't do something part-time and expect that it's going to work, or something partial. The yoga system is not so completely absorbing or totally protective in this particular day and age. No, the people don't get that type of total involvement through the yoga system. But through devotional service, because everything we do, we can do for Krishna. Everything we do, we can do for Guru and Krishna. If we organize our thoughts in the proper way and offer our devotional service in this attitude, we can be always protected. Krishna is known as Bhava Grihi Janardana. He accepts our mood of devotion. So it's essential that we maintain the proper frame of mind. That's what we have to learn from our gurus. If we don't have the proper frame of mind, if we have an enjoying attitude, or if we have some attitude that's colored by one of these three modes, or combination of the three modes, then we're not going to get that same kind of awakening. We're going to still be in this dreaming state to some extent. Maybe we're coming out of our sleep, but we're not fully awakened yet. We need to fully wake up and see things clearly as they are. So then gradually, as we find, encounter different illusions in our life by the help of the spiritual master, then and we start to adjust, and then things become more and more clear until finally when everything's clear, then we're considered liberated even while we're alive. So devotees, it's also described while we're chanting, we go into the clearing state. We're clearing away offenses. We're clearing away the illusions. The offenseless state of chanting, then that's also the liberated state. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he descends, so he's actually in our heart as a Chaitya Guru, he's there guiding us from inside. But he's so merciful that he also, he comes down as the Mahaprabhu, as the great teacher, to teach us by his example externally how we should engage in Krishna's service. Prabhupada explained, like the teacher sometimes takes the chalk in hand and shows the student, this is how you write. Or one of the samskaras we do is called Hatya Kodi, Vidyaramba, sometimes it's called, beginning the studies. Before any child goes to school, or goes to study, nursery school, whatever, the first time, then the parents take to one, the guru or a senior devotee, and they do this ceremony where, I just did one in India within the last month. You take the child's hand and you take some writing implement, and then you trace out the name of Krishna. So the first, the child's writing, you just hold the child's hand and write on the chalkboard, or in this case they had put some sand with the color of rice on it, so we wrote on the sand the names of Krishna. Or sometimes it's just a chalkboard or maybe nothing else, a piece of paper. So that's so the first, and then there's some mantras that are chanted at that time to bless. So the idea, everything we do, we want to begin and end with Krishna, and hopefully in the middle it will be also Krishna. So in the very beginning of a spiritual, of the child's life, they don't have the intellect to decide things on their own. So that's when, you know, you give the first grains. That's Krishna prasadam. What does the baby know whether it's prasadam or not? That's for the parents to give prasadam grain. You know, now people buy the bottled food and give the baby food, things like that. They don't know that there's a system that you should give the first solid food, or the first grains that are given should be prasadam. Blessed, sanctified food, the first writing, Krishna's name. And like that, there's so many different ceremonies when the child's under the care of the parent. In fact, there's a ceremony that's especially performed when during the first pregnancy, that during the 6th, 8th, or 9th month, a pregnancy called Simanta Nayana, where different prayers are performed for the blessing of the mother and the child in the womb. At that time, in case Garbhodan Samskara or the other first, after 3 months, there's a ceremony that's supposed to be performed. In case those weren't performed, then one prays for forgiveness for any negligence in having not perfectly performed those. And those are performed through mantra to ensure that the child is given the best spiritual boost, even while in the womb. So like this, there's so many different samskaras that are performed. And Prabhupada explained that for Krishna conscious devotees, having children is a very joyous and matter of celebration. We want our householders to have families and to have Krishna conscious children. And that's why there's so many ceremonies. Even Gopal Bhatta Goswami, when he wrote the Sanskar, Satriya Sanskar Dipika, he wrote down the Vaishnava samskaras. And here is one of the 6 Goswamis worshipping Radha and Krishna, and following in the footsteps of the gopis, running in Vrindavan after Krishna, and he takes the trouble to write the samskaras. And he writes, Garbhodan Samskara. Here's one of the Goswamis telling a householder how to perform Garbhodan Samskara, how to perform the pregnancy samskaras, how to perform the birth samskara, how to perform wedding. Chapter after chapter of the wedding samskara, of the Vivaha Yajna, the sacrifice of marriage. So he thought it was so important for the future generations of devotees that within his bhajan, he wrote this valuable book, and then he explains how everything should be done in a Krishna conscious way, and we shouldn't do these ceremonies to the demigods, to the devas, but to Vishnu.
explains all these things. Now this book has been translated into English. Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj's Bhaktivedanta Academy, they were selling it during the festival this year in Mayapur. And that's another thing which the temple can provide, a service for the congregation, is that they can perform these samskaras. And there's plenty of samskaras, and as long as people are having children, there's plenty of opportunity to be performing all kinds of samskaras. And it's a way that the whole community, it's a social event also, perform Annaprasana in South India. They have a huge feast. They feed the, invite all the relatives, they do the yajna. You know, we tend to just chant Hare Krishna and feed the grains. You can do it much more elaborately also. But, and then that way rather, it becomes a way that, you know, community is brought together, but in the focus is Krishna. Focus is becoming Krishna conscious. The point here, as we're discussing in this verse, is awakening. We want to see everyone woken up from their conditioning. So parents can do something even when the child's in the womb. They can do something when the child's a little baby. But then after the age of 5, then they have to bring the student to the Gurukul. They have to now start to train the student, the child is old enough to begin to start to understand things. And therefore the training has to begin in another mode. As Prahlad said, Komarama Chade Pragyo, they have to be taught how to act in Krishna consciousness even from the age of 5. They have to start acting. For most of us who haven't been born in Krishna consciousness, then, you know, we didn't start chanting Hare Krishna from the age of 5. We started much later, and we had so many mundane thoughts that are in the consciousness that we have to purify. Of course, even a child, they have got the thoughts from the previous lives, but they won't be so conscious. They'll be the subconscious tendencies. Prabhupada said that after some generations, like if the parents treat the children very nice, they give them love and affection and give them Krishna consciousness, and they become devotees, and then their children, they similarly get nicely taken care of and they become devotees. Then this way, after the third generation, Prabhupada said, you get children who are born with natural tendencies, brahminical tendencies and devotional tendencies. In other words, it's much easier for them, the type of children attracted in that environment, will have subconsciousness that are less disturbed, more Krishna conscious. So that's something that we need also in this. We need in our Krishna conscious movement to have that the generations of the children that are born should be very qualified. We need Prahlads and such great souls to, like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was and his wife who did a Brihadratha to get a ray of Vishnu. To go through a bit of austerity and pray to Krishna to give a Krishna conscious child. We need such souls to come into the movement and to help spread Krishna consciousness. That someone, if they're born liberated, then it's called, here we have a Jivan Mukta, liberated while you're living. Another category is called Janma Siddha, born perfect. Like Sukadeva Goswami, he was liberated right from birth. We could have a few, you know, one, a few means, you know, one Janma Siddha, someone who's born perfect, then it would be very helpful for the movement, wouldn't it, to push on. So, but we need actually many of the big worlds. Even one would be great. It's like Srinivasacharya, his parents were devotees. His father was Chaitanya Das, and his mother was her name was Lakshmi Priya. So they didn't have any children. They were serving, and they had no children. And somehow the wife she told the husband that, "I really feel that we should have a child." I said, "No, we're already old, you know, it's like almost time for Vanaprastha. It's not like, I don't feel like, I mean, this, well, suddenly now you're getting this idea." It's like, I know what you're thinking. It's not like I'm just lusty. I really feel that this is Krishna's desire. We should have a child. So, well, it's difficult for me to accept. I want to get this confirmed by some. So they decide, let's go and see Lord Chaitanya. And if he tells us, then we'll have a child. Otherwise, we're too old. That was the husband's thought. So they went. They went on a pilgrimage to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya. Thought that there they'll get the answer. It just so happened when they arrived on the big Rath Yatra road in front of the Jagannath Puri temple, they were like approaching. Have you been to Jagannath Puri? Anyone's been? So you know how there's like this big road where the Rath goes, and then there's the. You can see on that road for a long way, you can see the temple. So as you, the road from Bengal is maybe a kilometer and a half from the temple, and you start walking on this road up to the temple, it's quite spectacular. So they had been walking on the road, they were maybe, it doesn't say exactly, 100 or 200 meters from the temple, you can imagine. They're just close to the temple, not too far. And they can see that Lord Chaitanya is coming out with all of his associates, with Srub Damodar, with Govinda Das, with Ramananda Rai, and Sikhi Mahiti, and different devotees. They're coming out of the main gate, the Singhadwara of the Jagannath Puri temple. And as soon as they see Lord Chaitanya, golden form, immediately they offer their obeisances, and the husband's, you know, prostrated, the wife next to him offering obeisances. And they just stayed offering obeisances there. They're overwhelmed with humility and devotion. So even Lord Chaitanya walked by them. As soon as he was right next to them, there, their faces are down, offering obeisances. Nobody, you know, normal, how do you know? You can't see who somebody is. And he stops and he turns to his secretary and said, "These are my dear devotees. I want you to arrange for the place to stay in Prasadam." Then he said, "Jagannath Darshan, you make arrangement." Then he went on. So then all the devotees said, well, this is special mercy. I mean, you can't even see their face, and Lord Chaitanya knew this, they're my dear devotees. So the other devotees wanted to know, who are these devotees that got this special mercy? Who are they? They must be. Then, so they asked, you know, who are you? You're Lord Chaitanya, you're so dear to him. And so if you're dear to Lord Chaitanya, that means you're dear to us. Immediately the devotee, right? Not like, oh, that they got the special mercy, why didn't I get the mercy, right? Not, no envy in Krishna consciousness. Oh, you got special mercy, therefore you're very dear to Krishna, therefore you're dear to us. Who are you? We'd like to know. So immediately then they arranged, they got them a place to stay, they'd just been walking 500 kilometers from Bengal. So they freshened up, and then they went for darshan, Lord Jagannath, and then they got prasadam and everything, so like that. Then Lord Chaitanya also had said that, bring them to see me later. So they went to see Lord Chaitanya, and Govinda Das brought them in to see Lord Chaitanya, and they offered their obeisances again. Sad. They were going to ask, it was kind of embarrassing. No, they really felt, you know, at this point they were feeling, you know, like pretty self-conscious, going to ask Lord Chaitanya about this question was kind of embarrassing. But before they could say anything, Lord Chaitanya said, "You're going to have a child. You go back to your village and try to have a child. And that child is going to be my very great devotee. He's going to be an important servitor of me. His name, give the name Srinivas." Question for, you know, it's like, okay. And gave them blessings, and okay, that was it. So then no more doubt about what should happen. So then they had this, they had a child, and they gave the name Srinivas, and they were bringing him up. teaching him everything they could about Krishna consciousness. So there's one very beautiful story in the Bhakti Ratnakar about how when Srinivas was around 9 years old, he asked his father that how do you get the name Chaitanya Das? Because his born name was something different. Ganga Upadhyaya or something like that, I forget. So how did you get the name Chaitanya Das? And then she explained that I was living in this, well, where he lived was the home of Jajigram, which is Srinivasacharya's home. Now, we know it as that, but actually it was his father's home before that. And Jajigram is to the northwest of Katwa, about only a few kilometers, 4 or 5 kilometers. So that Chaitanya Das, he decided he wanted to go to Navadvip and see Lord Chaitanya. He had never seen Lord Chaitanya, heard so much about him. He was a devotee of Krishna. He wanted to see Nimai, he wanted to see Gauranga and get his blessings. So on this pilgrimage, he took off and he went to, and the route goes via Katwa. It just so happened at that time that Lord Chaitanya had come to Katwa with 4 associates, Nityananda, Mukunda, and Chandrasekhara, and Gadadhara, in order to take sannyas. He had decided to take sannyas for the preaching. It was necessary. He was 24 years old and decided to take this vow of sannyas. So he was there in Katwa. So there are huge crowds of people. So word got around that Lord Chaitanya, that, you know, that Gauranga Mahaprabhu was in Katwa, and thousands of people were milling around, and there was kirtans going on, things. And so then he asked, what's the big festival? What's happening? And they said, you don't know. The Lord Chaitanya, you know, is here. Gauranga Mahaprabhu is here. He's come here to take sannyas from Keshava Bharati. So really, I was going to see him. I was just going to Navadvip. And as I went to see the mountain came to me. So then, there was a kirtan going on. Lord Chaitanya was chanting in the middle. This huge crowd of people. Somehow, with his enthusiasm, he could work his way up through the crowd and he got right up to the first row. Major feat sometimes in these kirtans to get to the front. And Lord Chaitanya was dancing in kirtan, like spinning, and so the tears were coming out from his eyes, like sprinkling on everybody, spraying out on all the people around. So he's getting drenched in tears of, sprayed with tears of Lord Chaitanya's eyes. And it was just so amazing that the kirtan, and it was like just overwhelmed with this intense kirtan, Lord Chaitanya, and everyone was dancing in ecstasy. Then at one point, Lord Chaitanya said, okay, stop the kirtan. He said, now we have to go on with our business here. We have to. So he was given his so the next thing happened, he was bringing the barber. And he told the barber that I want you to shave off my hair. So Lord Chaitanya has beautiful hair, transcendental hair, and the barber went with his razor to cut the hair, and then all the people said, no, no! It's like they couldn't take it, you know. He was, why, you know, Lord Chaitanya is so beautiful, why should he, you know, cut his hair? It's like, especially in the back row of the monarchies. Go. Trying. The barber said, I can't do it. It's very offensive. I said, Lord, your job is your barber. You're supposed to cut hair, you know. I take all responsibility. You cut my hair. Otherwise, you're being offensive. Like I said, so then, okay, the barber. Then he is cutting. And I said, no, no, I couldn't take it to see Lord Chaitanya's hair cut off. The devotee saved that hair and built a samadhi for it and put that samadhi. There's a little samadhi temple to Lord Chaitanya's hair in Katwa. If you go there, you can see the samadhi temple.
of Keshava Bharati and the Samadhi of Lord Chaitanya's hair. Have you been to Katma? How many went to Katma? Prabhupada. So much nectar. When did you go? The boat party, yes. Then Lord Chaitanya went to the Ganga to take his bath, and then he was given his cloth, and he came back dressed in the saffron cloth. Very effulgent, golden. Then he called Kesha Bharati and he said, so you know the Vaishnav Sannyas mantra to give me? And then, is this the mantra you're going to give me? Then he spoke the mantra in the ear of Kesha Bharati. That way he actually initiated Kesha Bharati. It's the Adi Guru. Then that was given back by Kesha Bharati to Lord Chaitanya. Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. So up to that time, he wasn't known as Chaitanya. It was known as Gauranga, Gaurahari, Nimai. So then Kesha Bharati just gave him the name, and your name will be Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And then, so Chaitanya Da, who was Ganga something, he was some other name, Gangopadhyaya something. And then he was there in the front row, all this thing going on, he said, your name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Everyone is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. They're all shouting, Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
And it was just like so overwhelming, the whole thing, that the Chaitanya Das, he just like went into trance. It's like Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And he'd just be chanting, and for months and months he was just chanting Sri Krishna Krishna. He goes like, day and night, waking, sleep, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. That's how he got to be known as Chaitanya Das. So he was explaining what happened. But then as soon as he was explaining to Srinivas, and as he was remembering everything, and he was just seeing it right before his eyes. And then when he said, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, it was just like overwhelming for him. It was like, he fainted in ecstasy. He just fainted. It was like, went into trance again, and he was there. Fell off his seat on the ground, and he's just chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya, tears are pouring from his eyes, he's completely overwhelmed in separation of Lord Chaitanya. And seeing the transcendental bhava of his father, and being also completely overwhelmed in ecstasy hearing this pastime, the young Srinivas grabbed the feet of his father and put on his head, and he was also crying and chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Meanwhile, the mother had been cooking the boga to offer for lunch, and then she heard everybody falling down in the next room and went, what's going on? And she came out and saw the husband lying in a pool of tears, chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya, with the son holding his feet, crying and chanting, both on the ground. And then she offers her obeisances, crying in ecstasy, also feeling separation from Lord Chaitanya. So this was the transcendental family life of Srinivasacharya. His parents. So, some people there were born just to spread Krishna consciousness, you know. Prabhupada said there will be people, there are devotees who were sent just to preach, and there are devotees that will be born in the future. And we need a householder also to have the consciousness to bring in such souls into the world. So then we have here, we have Nitya Bhadda and Nitya Mukta. We have Jivan Mukta, and then we have the Janma Mukta, or Janma Siddha. So Srinivas, he was like that, born with that higher purpose. So for the rest of us, we have to be fixed in our becoming Krishna conscious by engaging every thought, word, and deed in Krishna's service. And in this way, by following the footsteps of the pure devotee, the previous acharyas, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, then even while we're in this life, we can be liberated from the influence of the three modes of material nature. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. Any question?
Just to remind my memory, What was the book by Gopada Goswami, Simanta?
Satkriya Sanskar Dipika.
That's available in my book.
Did you bring a copy? I asked him the pack. I personally five times asked my secretary to pass me pack 20 or 30 of them so I can take, because it's very good for the temples to do this. I went to him as part of the congregational preaching ministry that promote temples doing these samskaras. In some places, the congregation has grown so much and the temple kind of gets sidelined, in a sense, that the temple, they don't see what the temple does for them. But when it's like, when they actually, the temple is the place where you train the congregation, where you do the samskaras, where they gather together, then the temple becomes, you know, a very vital heart of the whole community. And that's maybe what it's supposed to be.
Maybe you get another tooth at the same
time. When Nityasiddha appear in this world, we are not necessarily, when Nityasiddha or Shandasiddha appear in the world, they are not necessarily mentioned in the scriptures.
No. They're not like avatars, that they have to be predicted. They come along with, and after the avatars come, then there's so many Nitya Siddhas that come along and help to help the Lord in His service. So Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are still present, so He's going to be sending so many devotees to help Him in His pastime. His pastime, He predicted every town and village of the whole world will be flooded with Krishna consciousness. There'll be the whole world will be flooded with love of Godhead. Obviously, the pastime is not over yet. There's a few places that haven't been flooded yet. We just got the beachhead, you know, just like got our foot in the door. You know, we're here. Lord Chaitanya is here, and all we have to flood. And as I explained last night, it's really possible. You know, I mean, people want to just like, how is it possible? It seems that, you know, but just if you take the simple calculation that every devotee makes one other devotee in a year, you know, not necessarily they have to join the temple, but just get them to chant Hare Krishna, to accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of God. One in a year or one in 6 months, it's not, I mean, for some devotees, they make much more than that. But just say, even if we just did one, I mean, we did one in, if we doubled every year, we did a calculation, you start out with 100 people and you double every year, at the end of 12 years you get 500,000. So why don't we have 500,000? We've been here 30 years in this kind. Why don't we have 500,000 devotees in every temple? We should have millions, right? Because everybody isn't preaching like they should. You know, we think that temple president will preach, or one or two or four people preach, so the four people double every year. But if everybody does their part, then we can, the movement can explode. Also, because we maybe didn't focus that being a devotee doesn't mean you have to move in the temple. What are you going to do with 500,000 people in this temple? You have to shrink everybody, right? Prabhupada said that we don't need hundreds and thousands of people living in our temples. Everybody should be practicing Krishna consciousness in their home. You know, some people are living in the temples for doing a brahminical role of for the rest of the community, but the point is that everybody can practice Krishna consciousness in their home. So with that vision, then it's not difficult. And we can see, like, as in the community, you see that the initiated and the dedicated congregational members are very much a vibrant and an integral part of our whole community. And even though they, through their different activities, they're sustaining and helping the community grow in so many ways also. So it's not something artificial or something very natural. Lord Chaitanya, in the beginning of his movement, there was no such thing as a temple, an ashram. Every home was an ashram. They were all householders and students. And that's how they were preaching and working together. Only from the time of the six Goswamis did they really start to build temples. Lord Nityananda did Namhata. His son, Birchandra, built temples, and the next generation built temples, and there were Brahmanas and preachers that
based out of these temples. But everybody was encouraged to chant from the, and practice in their home. So the temples are really the basis for preaching and for the center of the community. People gather together to worship the deities and get pancharatrik, purification. But the deity is the Archavatar. Krishna incarnates as the deity form. So the temple becomes a place of pilgrimage, an auspicious place where you can perform samskaras and weddings and can chant. So wherever the Vishnu deity is established, the area within one yojana is considered to be sanctified or purified just by the presence of the Vishnu deity. That's 8 miles. That's about, 12 kilometers or 13 kilometers? 12. Is it 12? Something like that. And then it depends. That's if one does installation by brahmanas. But if the deity is installed by, and it gives different, if it's depending who it's installed by, then it has more effect. If it's installed by a great devotee, then it has a much greater effect, spreading even. It can also spread throughout the universe, spread for 100,000 yojanas, deep into the other planets. If Lord Brahma installs the deity, then it affects the whole universe. And if it's a self-manifested deity, then the whole entire creation. Yes?
Is it necessary for someone to install a deity if the deities are already being worshipped? Isn't that just as good because Krishna is here?
Well, because we follow the Shastra, and the scripture says that we should formally invite the Lord. Prabhupada said sometime, as far as he's concerned, just putting the deity on the altar and chanting Hare Krishna. He's happy with that. The Krishna's there. But then sometimes the disciples or the pujaris, what happens, you develop this consciousness that, well, the deities weren't formally invited, and therefore it's like, if we're not so strict, it doesn't matter. And you tend to, it's like you can develop, if actually everybody, it's enough if they really all have the faith and everything, then. But something, when you actually formally request the Lord, you really know that, okay, I've taken, it's like a vow. I'm still wearing these bands because I did it from some of the deity installations. They tie you up, you're the yajaman, you're vowing. The mantras say that, well, we're inviting you to come here, we want you to be forever happy. Nitya tushtanti jayate, we want you to be always happy, tushtanti, blissful here, we want you to be with us forever. And so it's more the meditative, of course, for someone like Madhavendra Puri or anyone, it doesn't really matter. Some great Vaishnava, they do an abhishek. Of course, that deity that he found was already installed deity. It was worshipped by the son or grandson of Krishna. But there are others. So generally, we perform these ceremonies for various reasons. But I see that practically the consciousness of the pujaris, and they take it also more serious, and the commitment of the devotees is very purified. And because that's provided by the scripture, we should do. Not that Krishna is not there if you don't do. In fact, when you've been worshipping a deity for some time, you don't do the same installation like you would as if you hadn't been worshipping the deity. It's not like you cover their eyes again and do netra milanam and things like that. Because you consider the deity is there, but just, it's like you do an abhishek and formally ask Krishna to be there as this kind of like a confirmation, just like an additional. You don't do the whole, as if you have a brand new deity that you've never worshipped. Then you do all this sulpi dosha snanam and sayan arivas and danya arivas and all these different arivases to purify the bimba, the statue, the form from any contamination that came through the making process and handling. And then you do the samhara susti, which you
by mantra destroy all material elements and recreate them on the transcendental platform of Chintamani. And then you request, Krishna, it's a process of awakening Krishna in the form of the deity. It's like a meditation. So that can happen immediately just by the request of pure devotee, Krishna, please come and accept our worship. But if you do according to the ritual, even if someone said, well, you're not, someone may have, not everybody has equal faith that everybody's a pure devotee. So if you do the ritual, then even by the ritual it'll work. And everyone's brahmana, so in one sense, it takes everybody off any scope of mental platform and firmly establishes that Krishna has been invited here. According to the rituals that are given in the Pancharatra system, we've also been invited by devotees of the Lord, and therefore Krishna is here. Everyone should have that faith and whatever. It's kind of a very neophyte maybe perspective, but apart, it just clarifies very clearly that what's happening. But it's not that that's...
At least from that point on, the standards will be very strict.
Yeah, then you really have to keep the few... Once you've taken the formal commitment, you really have to keep the formal standard. You can't reduce that anymore. You can't, get into that, Krishna's there, but, it's like, we don't really have to, Then only brahmanas, because according to Pancharatic system, you invited the Lord. Then you have to maintain the Pancharatic standard, only brahmanas, worshipping the deities, things like that. So there's definitely, the consciousness of the devotees, it becomes a commitment, a little more serious. What they consider, what I've understood, is that uninstalled deities are like worshipping a picture in a sense. But when you're worshipping in a public forum in the temple, then there's so many devotees praying and taking shelter of the deities that somehow Krishna, he comes naturally there. But in the home, it's like a picture. Any other question? I think many devotees have to take their breakfast and go, but I have to chant something before I can eat. I'll just stay here and chant. I don't know if anybody wants to have you can take your breakfast and come. I can do a morning japa workshop. We missed it. We went too late last night. Tonight we have to see.
Actually, we have darshan. Some devotees want to take darshan.
You can tell me the window slots when they're available, and we can. Yesterday some people work from 10 to 5.
Yeah, we have some
lined
up from between 10 and 1. Some
devotees
want to see.
All right, let me get.
Say 11
and 1. Yeah, okay.
We'll take Prashad.
Take here, close the door.
Evening.
Well, I guess I'll go for a walk.
Unless we could all fit in the video, right? How many devotees are taking shot on the show?
Well, that's all right. I'll take a walk around the block. Then. Yeah. You take here, I'll take a walk. What's the next program?
For sure.